We're nearing summer solstice, and the season of sunshine and festivities is just about in full swing. Dinner parties, barbecues, and potlucks are on almost everyone's calendar. Food as a form of congregation. Now, sometimes these edible gatherings can mean lowering our palate standards, as some of our friends, although dear, unfortunately may not know how to prepare a palatable meal. In fact, it seems there are many standard American fare dishes that most Americans just don't know how to cook. Hello, I'm Tika Ballas, your host this week for Hometown Alaska. Today, my guests and I will discuss how to make a culinary savant in just 1 hour. Please call in and share with us some of the cooking hints and tips you've acquired, or call up with any questions you may have for the kitchen or the grill. Today, I have in the studio with me personal chef and caterer Ellen Robertson of Heart and Soul Catering and Wellness Services. Ellen specializes in vegan and vegetarian food. Good afternoon, Ellen.
Hi there.
And we also have in the studio with us Chef Guy Conley of Ginger Restaurant, located in downtown Anchorage. Guy has received a bit of attention lately. Not only is he featured on the cover of Anchorage Daily News' new quarterly magazine, 61 Degrees North, he's also got bragging rights. Guy made the shortlist for the James Beard Award, the creme de la creme, so to speak, of national culinary awards. And he is the first chef in Alaska to ever be nominated. Congratulations and good afternoon, Guy.
Thank you very much, Tika.
Again, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing how to make the foods we take for granted a scrumptious experience. If you're out there listening and have something to share, I encourage you to call in. The number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And if you're outside the Anchorage area, dial 888-353-5752 or email us at hometownalaska.org. Now, I know both of you are well beyond the cooking basics, but you have had to have started out with some of the same basics the rest of us are obviously still struggling with. And the most all-American comfort food that many Americans seem to get wrong is the hamburger. Guy, tell us why.
Well, I think a lot of the problem people have is overcooking burgers. You know, if you're getting fresh meat out of the grocery store, you know, I like to use 80-20, which is 80% of the beef and then 20% fat. It really gives it a lot juicier. And, you know, 90-10 is good as well. But, you know, don't be afraid to eat it at medium. You know, overcooking burgers is a big problem a lot of people have. And just using simple salt and pepper helps as well.
And what's the trick if you're grilling to find out if your burger's done? Sometimes people seem to be afraid to just cut that open. It's not like a steak.
Yeah, if you cut it open, you know, you are going to lose a little bit of the juice as well. I use the touch method. You know, if there's a little bit of spring in it, it's still pretty good. If it feels really dense, it's usually overcooked.
So you're saying you want a bouncy burger?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about things to add to your burger to give it flavor that won't draw out flavor or moisture?
What I like to do is I'll mix my hamburger mix together. I use a little bit of onion, some jalapenos sometimes, salt and pepper, a little bit of egg, and some breadcrumb to bind it together. And then just, you know, salt and pepper, keep it really simple.
Keeping it really simple. I think most people's idea of keeping it simple is just to roll up the hamburger, squash it, and put it on the grill.
Probably a little different than my keeping it simple, absolutely.
It sounds like when you make it your way, though, that you're not needing to necessarily add a whole lot of condiments to juice it up.
No, not really. You know, I like blue cheese on my burger. Any cheese, really. I'm not going to lie. I love cheese. So, but blue cheese is really good on a burger. And, you know, you're not going to need much mayonnaise and mustard, ketchup, any of that stuff if you do it right.
And is there anything in that whole combination of ingredients that you've just mentioned that you put into your burgers that are different if you're doing it on the grill versus a pan?
No, not really. I think, you know, grilling and pan frying is, you know, pretty similar in the aspect of using the same ingredients.
And if you're doing it in a pan also, I noticed that there's a lot of, not that I ever cook, but that there is a lot of grease buildup that you want to drain out that normally on a grill will
fall right
through.
Fall. Yeah.
Does that mean you can use like a lower fat content?
Yeah, that's usually really good. And if you're going to use lower fat content in your burger and you still want some fat, always add a little bit of butter. So, but if you don't want the fat, you know, spray with some Pam or pan coating, something like that, if you want to go a little healthier.
Butter makes the burger better.
Absolutely.
Now, Ellen, you specialize in vegetarian and vegan food, which means that you must know how to make a vegetarian burger.
Yes, I do.
Now, as I've noticed in different places that specialize in veggie burgers, there are like thousands of them. There's rice burgers, tempeh burgers, tofu.
That's very true.
There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest for the vegetarian or the person hoping to appease the vegetarian coming to their house? What is the simplest and tastiest way to make a vegetable burger?
I'd say the easiest way to make a veggie burger that's tasty, even for people who don't consider themselves vegetarians, is to get yourself some TVP, which is textured vegetable protein. Usually comes a couple of different ways, in chunks or cubes, and then you can get some that's kind of shredded. It looks like Pepperidge Farm dressing, breadcrumbs. And what you want to do is soak that and for the amount that you want. And then mix that with beans and chopped vegetables. And it's like working with ground beef. And you just mix it together and form your burgers. And you can grill them or broil them or do them on the stovetop.
And how long do they normally take if you're grilling them?
They don't really need to cook because everything in there is pretty much done. You use canned beans, black beans, I highly recommend. And so just until they're browned, till you get some marking on there, you want to spray them with Pam and... you know, just so you don't have any sticking going on, and you're good.
That makes it sound really easy.
Yeah.
Why am I paying $12 for one of those?
There's no reason, because you can make up a whole batch and put them in your freezer and have them for next time.
Well, okay, it seems like we really quickly got over the most basic American food that everybody gets wrong, and you guys made it really, really simple in, I think, less than 5 minutes. Congratulations. But that can't be all of it, right? There's a whole lot of stuff we seem to get wrong about our American fare. What is some of your experiences of feasting at friends' places that they seem to get, not that you have to rat on your friends right now, but the foods that they seem to get traditionally wrong most of the time?
Well, and I'll tell you, I have a lot of friends that are nervous about inviting me over in the first place. You know, they get a little nervous when a chef comes. And I tell them, just like I tell everybody else, I don't complain about free food. I just, I enjoy it. It's great. Thank you very much. But, you know, people mess up. I think pasta is a really easy one. People overcook pasta a lot, you know, to where it's really kind of gummy, you know, and it should be a little bit more al dente. I think the best way to do that is, you know, add a little bit of water, I'm sorry, oil to your water to keep it from sticking, and just, you know, follow the package a little bit. Read directions, I think, is a big problem people have, you know.
So you have to read, have a clock that tells time, yes. And watch boiling water all
exactly.
At once. It's multitasking, it's worst.
But if you have a general idea, you know, spaghetti usually takes about 9 to 10 minutes, fettuccine about the same. If you're going to have a little bit more dense pasta, it's going to take a little bit longer. And then cooling it off once it's done cooking is a big thing that people don't do. Well, if you just put it in the strainer, it's going to continue to cook unless you put some cold water on it. And that's where I think a lot of people run into that problem, is the continuous cooking of the pasta as it's, you know, sitting there in its own heat. So, you know, if you've got a good hot sauce, you can have cold pasta and just add the hot sauce to it, and it'll heat it right up, bring it right back to temperature. And that's a good way to keep it from not becoming gummy and gluey and that kind of stuff.
Well, and I do remember reading that one of your stepping stones into the cooking world was actually Italian food, correct?
Right, yes. My dad grew up with a Sicilian stepfather in Rhode Island and had the big garden in the backyard and, you know, really taught cooking at home. You know, they didn't eat out. They were, you know, poor just like everybody else at that time. You know, grew up in the 40s and 50s and stuff. So, you know, it was, everything was cooking at home then. And so my dad learned how to cook at a young age, and I learned as well from him, you know, how to cook some of the basics, tomato sauce and stuff like that, hamburgers and steaks on the grill kind of thing.
So. You know, it seems like with Italian food too, like there's different types of pasta. There's thicker, wider noodles. There's what they call angel hair. There's mm-hmm. also many names for the same pastas, but they cook differently and they go with different types of sauces, correct?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
What is like the most taboo thing you see most commonly with, like, say, spaghetti and
Alfredo sauce?
Oh, yeah.
You know, instead of like a fettuccine or linguine.
That's a bad one, huh?
Yeah. You know, I don't, you know, people can do whatever they want. If it tastes good, that's what matters.
What about angel hair, though? What is good with that thin, goopy stuff?
Angel hair is really good. Like you said, it's really small, really thin. Baby's breath is another word for it. And you just, real quick, minute and a half, cook it in boiling water, chill it. I like to toss it with just a little bit of Parmesan cheese, olive oil, and fresh garlic with a little bit of chili flakes. Or a really light pesto is really good with it. You can do...
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sun-dried tomato pesto or mm-hmm. regular pesto or walnut pesto. I mean, there's so many different things. You know, really simple, the olive oils and the cheese.
It should be really noted that neither of my chefs brought food for us to sample today. We're not holding any
pasta. I had a feeling you'd bring that up.
That's okay. I'm sure nobody wants to listen to me eat into the microphone either. You're thinking about your listeners. That's very good.
Yeah.
Now, Ellen, as far as going with pastas and such, it seems one of the major things that vegetarian cooking has to deal with is adding flavor to food that most people think vegetarian food is lacking. Is there anything special that you like to do with pastas in lieu of, say, meat dishes or meat sauces?
Well, I think vegetables and vegetable sauces are the basis of flavor. And so I don't get the whole thing about flavorless vegetarian food. But I have to say, as far as pasta, as far as a carb, my favorite thing is rice. So given a choice, personally, I always go with rice as opposed to pasta. But I do have my pasta cravings. So garlic, you can't go wrong with garlic and pasta. Onions, all types of onions, shallots, green onions, sweet onions, all kinds of tomatoes and herbs, basil. You want to try and work with as many fresh herbs as you can, because that really makes a difference in the flavor rather than shaking it out of a little bottle.
Is there like a type of sauce that you can make without, it's like a Alfredo, for instance. A lot of people really like creamy based flavors or cheeses on their pasta dishes. Let's just go with that. And if you're doing a vegan dish, is there any way to make like a good like Alfredo with any of the dairy alternatives?
Oh, definitely. Let's see. Well, one thing I like to do is put some tofu, raw tofu, in a blender. You can thin it out with almond milk or soy milk, a nice, you know, full soy milk, not one of the light ones. And you put... I add a little turmeric for color to give it a little richer color. And then you want to, you know, of course, put your flavors in there, the garlic, your onions, and, you know, just put it in the food processor or blender and then saute it, cook it down. And it makes a nice creamy sauce.
Now, are you using the soft tofu or the firm?
The soft.
The soft, okay.
Mm-hmm.
The silky.
Yes.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Makes it smooth and you don't have all those lumps to worry about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you make it sound easy. It's tofu to me is like a magical cuisine thing that only the professionals can mess with. People don't do this at home kind of instructions. Now, it is summer, so let's talk about like some of the cool things that you can do with pastas and barbecue sauce. You want to kind of wow your friends at the same time of not just making it right, but wowing them. Make them think that you're cooler than maybe you are. Okay, I'll just take this first person to make my friends think that I'm cooler than I really am. What are some of your suggestions to me and my our listeners here today on how to spice it up at a barbecue or at a potluck gathering? What are some really cool ideas?
I think what I like to do, a really simple dish, is a pasta salad. And the best way, you know, cook your pasta off, get a good little bit of Parmesan cheese, some diced tomatoes, green onions, and then use a balsamic vinaigrette dressing. You know, even a store-bought, you know, Paul Newman's balsamic vinaigrette is a really good one. And just toss it with that, and really great flavor. Finish it with a little fresh cracked pepper, and you'd be surprised how, you know, really good it is, and really nice and light and fun for a summer picnic or barbecue or anything like that.
And Ellen, do you know of one that you like to surprise people with?
Oh, my. Well, one of my favorite signature dishes is, it's a torta primavera. And, okay, when I say crepes, everybody might cringe a little bit, but they're so easy to make. And, you know, all you need is a good nonstick pan. And you make a bunch of those, and then you just thinly slice vegetables, all kinds of vegetables, squashes, eggplant, onions, tomatoes, peppers, and you put them in between the crepes. And when you're done, it looks like a cake, and you slice it like a cake, and then you put it on the plate with a little balsamic, and it's beautiful, and it's very pretty, and but it eats like a salad, but it's a little, you know, because sometimes you get tired of salad, and so you want something, or you're getting all your veggies, but you don't have that feeling like
little
you're eating
substance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Again, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing how to make the foods we take for granted a scrumptious experience, how to make it a little more impressive when we attend barbecues and potlucks this summer. If you're out there listening and you have some tips to share, some secrets that you're willing to share with us and the rest of our listeners, the number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside the area, of course, dial 888-353-5752. Or go ahead, if you're shy about having your voice on the air, email us at hometownalaska.org. Now we come back to a couple of other things about what to impress our friends with at barbecues and such. Now, it seems to me that almost every time I'm invited to one of these kind of galas, people are like, well, the salads are already called on, and the chips and salsa, so you have to bring the main dish. I go into a state of paralysis. I bring out the joy of cooking cookbooks, throw them in the air with a deep sigh, and call another friend to help back me up. What are some really great main course dishes that are super easy for those of us who are not quite as adept in the kitchen to still impress, but also not impress upon our hectic schedules?
Kebabs are great because they're fun, and you know, they look good. You can do them ahead of time. They're easy to put together, and they look wonderful, and they're not real expensive to make, you know?
Okay, you say absolutely, Guy. You say, Ellen, kebabs. I've had horrible, horrible kebabs. First of all, let's start with, what's a good cut of meat for a kebab?
Well, I'd like to put a little bit of fat in it, you know, so a ribeye or something like that. Filet actually works pretty good too, even though there's not very much fat in it, but it cooks really good. And if you want to get it to a nice medium rare, it's going to help out. I think people need to add a little bit to it. I like to marinate mine beforehand, or even just brush it with a light olive oil, maybe some basil chopped up, salt, pepper. Just keep it really simple, a little bit of lemon juice maybe even, and just keep rotating it in the pan. Maybe if you do them in the morning and you're going to grill them off in the late afternoon, just kind of rotate them a lot, and, you know, don't overcook them. You know, I think is a big problem with a lot of people is not paying attention to the grill.
Well, it seems too, like, how do you gauge when the meat is done and the vegetables are done, or the vegetables are done and the meat's not done? Is there a trick to that?
Size, cutting everything into the right sizes. You know, you don't want to have giant pieces of meat and then small pieces of vegetables, and then your vegetables are burnt and your meat's, you know, rare.
Well, and Ellen, it seems like a lot of people try to skip over the vegetables just to get to the meat. Let's just admit it. especially in places like here in Alaska, we tend to be particularly carnivorous. But how do you make that vegetable just as appealing as the meat generally is? What are you using on your vegetables?
For me, it's all about the marinade or the rub or... I really like to, you know, it's a fine line between letting the natural taste of the vegetable come through, which for me 90% of the time is enough. But sometimes you want something a little added to that. So the marinade, you know, just, you want something that's not going to get in the way, but that's going to accentuate the flavor of the veggie. So citrus is a wonderful thing for most vegetables, little lime juice, lemon juice. Sesame oil is a nice oil to use to give it a different flavor. And as far as the kebabs, not to step on the meat, your meat toes, but ham is a great meat to use in a kebab because it's easy and usually it's already cooked, you know, for the most part. So you're just going for, you know, you're not really looking for that temp, you know.
Does the ham then, like, mix, like, a good, like, ham oil or grease, rather, over the vegetables? Does that spread usually, or?
Not so much, I don't think, but it takes a glaze well, and so... If you make up a quick little something with brown sugar, you put some pineapple on your kebab, you know, you've got something awesome going on there.
We have Happy on the line over here from Anchorage. You have some basics for a private chef. Hello, Happy.
Hi there. I wanted to ask what basics that a novice chef might gather in order to, start their repertoire of equipment. You know, like my next purchase is probably going to be a good stand fixture. But, you know, I know that there are certain pot stands and gadgets that would be really helpful to somebody like me. I live by myself. I'm a bachelor, and so I've had to learn how to cook for survival purposes. But, you know, I would like to get better.
Great. Guy is nodding his head emphatically. He agrees. What did you have to offer there?
Yeah, the mixer, KitchenAid mixer is great. I mean, they have tons of attachments that you can get for it. The mixing bowl in itself is great to have, but they've got pasta makers to where you can make your own pasta at home. They've got meat grinders and even sausage extruders so you can make your own sausage at home. They're a little bit more spendy than, you know, the average kitchen equipment. But if you're really wanting to go after it and really kind of want to make it something that you're really into, then KitchenAids are definitely really nice to have. a good mixer and a good mandolin too, a good slicer for
a
quick.
Mandolin?
Mandolin, a Japanese mandolin. They're really cheap. You know, you can get one for $15, $20, and it makes slicing a whole lot easier. Great uniformity.
I'm wondering about mandolins as to whether that would be worth it.
Absolutely, for $15 to $20, yeah. I mean, it's definitely worth it to have it in your house.
Oh, good.
And a salad spinner. Don't forget about that.
Suggestion to make for people for making if they have too much sauce left over, like for instance, a tomato paste. I don't always use it all, so I usually just put it in an ice maker. You know. About a tablespoon at a time and freeze it, put it in bags after it's frozen. That way you got about a tablespoon at a time left over, you don't have to throw it away.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Freezing sauces is a great thing. Sauces, tomato sauce especially. You know, usually when you're making a good sized batch of tomato sauce, you're not going to eat it all at the same time. So what I like to do is freeze it, and then I'll make a lasagna out of it, you know, a month and a half later. Chili's another one like that too. You make a big pot of chili, you're not going to eat it all. You could save it. Stuff like that. My stepdad, growing up, we had a vegetable container in the freezer that any vegetables that didn't get eaten for dinner would get thrown into that. And then at the end of the month, we'd have a big goulash, a big stew, something like that.
So even though really it's well. Like a taboo to like serve frozen fish and such, it's okay to throw out there the previously frozen sauce?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Happy, so much for your call. Now, there's a whole bunch of other things that come up with these culinary starter-ups, and Happy just mentioned a bunch of things that I have no idea about. Mandolin, to me, is an instrument that collects dust in the corner of my apartment. So could you explain again what this mandolin is?
Sure. It's a small slicer, and usually they have various attachments to it, too. So it's really good for slicing onions, stuff like that, celery, cucumbers. A lot of salad stuff is good, and then it's got attachments to where you can do a fine julienne, which is the little strips, and that way you're keeping it more uniform, and that way, you know, uniformity is really key when you're cooking, too. You know, if you have different sized vegetables, obviously one's going to cook faster than the other, so having uniformity is really good.
It's not just about looking pretty.
That too, absolutely. Aesthetics is a big part of eating. You know, you look at your food first, obviously. So the first thing to your food is your sight, and then usually your smell, and then your touch, and then your taste. So.
Well, there's a whole lot of things with the way I've been cooking then I've been doing wrong. There's a couple of things I want to go back to before we go too much further. One of them was rice. Rice came up, and too often, myself included, people undercook rice. And I have found, especially with the thicker grains like brown rice or wild rice, it's really hard to get that because I follow the directions and it still comes out crunchy. Is there a trick to this?
Well, wild rice is supposed to be a little crunchy. And I would say, and Happy, take note, get a rice cooker.
Absolutely.
It will make your life so much easier. And you can't go wrong with your rice in a rice cooker.
Regardless
of what?
Doesn't
matter whether it's brown rice, white rice, basmati, forbidden rice, any kind of rice.
Well, and a lot of the new rice cookers that are coming out now have the brown rice setting for it. Because if you just put it in with a normal, you know, in a normal rice cooker and set it for normal rice, it's definitely going to come out underdone.
That's
you know, brown
true.
Rice definitely takes a lot longer. So a lot of the new rice cookers are coming out with that attach or feature with it, so you can get good proper brown rice at home.
Again, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing how to make the foods we take for granted a scrumptious experience. If you would like to call up, if you have those hints and tips, some of you I know you don't want to part with your secrets. Because it's what makes you a champion at the big galas in your neighborhood. I understand that. You can send us an email at hometownalaska.org. Or if you're brave enough to share it, you can do so on air at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Guy, one of the things that I find that I especially am not good at is cooking fish.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems I'm not the only one. Seems a really easy thing to undercook and overcook fish. And here in Alaska, during this time of year, we have a lot of fish. and it doesn't have to come directly from the freezer any longer.
Right.
What, in your experience, is the hardest fish to be cooking up there?
The fish I've never cooked before is the hardest one for me, usually. but, you know, the Alaska fare, the trout, salmon, halibut, you know, all really fairly easy to cook. You don't want to put it on your hottest spot on your grill. You know, your grill's definitely going to have hot spots and cold spots. And, you know, for fish, I like to keep it in kind of the medium range and just keep an eye on it, turning it, and, you know, just constantly keeping an eye on the fish is a good idea.
Now, are there types of fish that are better to be done on a pan versus a broiler or?
Sure, there's a lot of, you know, more flaky fish. The halibut, you know, tends to be a little bit more flaky. So on the grill, if you're doing it in smaller pieces, you know, definitely keep an eye on it. If you're doing a whole fillet, it's going to be a little bit easier, of course. Salmon is really sustainable. You can grill salmon. You can, you know, sear it, saute it, steam it. You know, salmon is one of those great fishes.
And what about this escalar? I've been reading about a lot of escalar lately, and it seems to be getting easier to find in the markets here.
It is. A lot of the purveyors around town carry it. Escalar is basically the South American name for it. Over in Hawaii, it's called walu. And so it's got different, you know, names to it, but it's a lot like, I compare it to a mix between halibut and ahi. It's got the real firmness of ahi and really good sustainability, and it's also a white fish too, but really buttery, flaky, really delicious fish.
Now, does citrus tend to dry out a fish when you're cooking it?
It won't dry it out. It'll help cook the process of cooking, you know.
I've heard a lot of myths. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I've never heard of it drying out the fish. You know, definitely use it in a marinade. If you want to marinate your fish, halibut's a good one. You know, a little bit of orange juice, some olive oil, and really brings out the flavor.
And you're nodding your head, Ellen. Do you work with fish at all?
I do.
Mm-hmm. And what seems to be like the most predominant fish that you're using right now?
Oh, I'd say salmon and halibut. Yeah, I'd say those two mainly.
Now, I know it's supposed to be completely taboo to ever use frozen fish, but for a lot of the people here, they collect a lot of salmon over the season and could not possibly eat it all at once. So what are some of the ways to disguise that frozen salmon when you break it out?
Well, I think it's only taboo in restaurants. It's definitely not taboo in the home. It's a smart choice in the home. A lot of people do their summer fishing in Alaska and take home quite an abundance of it, and freezing it is good. Grilling it as well, you know, helps out. I like to smoke a lot of the excess salmon, and you can still freeze the smoked salmon too. Canning it is really good as well, especially for middle of winter, making a good salmon burger, you know, taking that smoked salmon and crumbling it up, making a good burger out of it, searing it off, getting really good flavor, and then just making a homemade tartar sauce.
And it seems with salmon, it seems like an easy fish when you first get it out of the ocean, first of all, that you can just cook it. It doesn't seem like undercooking is really a problem as much as some other fish.
No, medium rare salmon is delicious. I find that, you know, a little bit of tenderness in the middle is fine.
And I've heard some horrifying things about halibut, though. What about halibut being undercooked?
Yes, you know, it'll have a translucent look to it if it's undercooked. You know, if the fish has worms, God forbid, you know, maybe that has part of it. But, you know, you're going to check your fish before you cook it, and you'll definitely see worms if they're in there.
Is that normal for halibut?
Halibut does typically, especially, you know, the larger fish sometimes will have worms. If you have a good medium-sized fish, you know, you're usually pretty good about it. And you'll see them in there. If you get some.
Does that mean it's a bad halibut?
Yeah, you want to throw it out just like any other food that would have parasites in it.
But there's another thing is the trout. I see at the market sometimes the full trout. Mm-hmm. What are you supposed to do with that thing?
Stuff it and grill it.
So you don't have to fillet it, right?
No, it's usually they take the guts out and everything. So, you know, just stuff it, wrap it in foil, and throw it right on the grill and then pull it out and eat it. You know, you got to watch out for the bones and a little bit of skin, but halibut or I'm sorry, trout are a little bit smaller. So, you know, you can kind of expect those things.
Again, this is Hometown Alaska. Today we're discussing how to make culinary savants out of all of us in just 1 hour. I'm Tika Ballas here at Hometown Alaska.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the show repeats tonight at 10. Remember, tonight's recorded rebroadcast will not be taking phone calls. Following this afternoon's broadcast, you can also find a copy of today's Hometown Alaska online at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
If you've just turned in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing cooking tips, how to make your food taste like a professional made it. My culinary experts today with us are Chef Guy Connolly of Ginger Restaurant and Chef Ellen Robertson of Heart and Soul Catering and Wellness Services. If any of you are listening and would like to share some tips you've acquired or ask those nagging cooking questions you may have, please call us at 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. And right now we have Rick with us, and you have some questions about rice cooking method?
No, actually, just had some comments. I've been cooking for a long time, and, you know, for myself or whoever would sit down with me. And actually, I wanted, before I mention the rice, I'd go back to just to the more recent topic of fish. And I like citrus, any citrus with my fish. And I will, if I have a roast, I will just slice up some big half wedges or half slices of orange, lemon, or lime and slide them right inside with onion and various things and let them cook inside of the fish. Or if I have a fillet, I'll just lay them on top and they kind of, as they get baked, you know, some of the juice kind of drizzles out onto the fish, and it's delicious. Getting back to the rice issue, my ma dated a Filipino guy years ago. We're talking, you know, back in, another century, I think. But he taught me a long time ago about what he described as a Filipino style or method and of cooking rice. And I've used it for, more than 35, 40 years. And that was, doesn't matter how much rice you use, it really doesn't even matter. I don't know why it doesn't matter, but it hasn't made a difference whether I was doing brown rice or white rice. You put your rice in the bottom of a pan, and then you fill water over the rice. And here's the interesting part. You measure, you put water over the rice, and you bring your middle finger down into the water and touch the top of the rice. And with the water up to your first knuckle, that's the right amount. And so then you bring it to boil. And once it boils, you turn it way down to as low a simmer as you can and simmer it until all the rice or all the water is absorbed. And it's good. And it's done. And it seems to work. I don't know. I think it's a magical Filipino method, but it's always worked.
Wow. Thank you, Rick. That sounds like a magical method. I'm going to go try it.
No, it's definitely
You know, cooking is not... cooking can be science, but cooking is about, you know, having fun and not worrying too much about measuring
exactly.
But things and seeing how they taste and seeing how they work out. So, try that style at home. You'll find it works pretty well.
Great. Thank you, Rick.
I've used that method before as well. And another one, too, is if you've got a, you know, rice cooker or something, put your hand flat on top of the rice. And once it comes up to the top of your knuckles, there is another one, too.
So it's a big pot that you were using there.
Yeah, not your household pot, pretty much. So
I usually just go, I guess it'd be like a half inch above the rice, you know, quarter to a half inch above whatever amount of rice is in there. And that's why I had no idea about these new fangled rice cookers, because I just always put that amount of water in, and it always comes out perfect.
Well,
so,
you know, Rick had a good point there with the rice, but he also pointed out what we were just discussing about the citrus, and you'd mm-hmm. put big wedges. Now, I recall that there's a dish with a fish that's cooked in citrus, or it's just...
Ceviche.
Ceviche. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
So it seems that then the acids from citrus are cooking fish. Mm-hmm. Does that speed up your cooking time then if you're cooking fish on a grill?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, if you're gonna marinate it for especially an extended amount of time beforehand, it's definitely going to help cook it. And you'll see it when you pull it out to start cooking. It'll already have, like for halibut example, it'll have that white look as opposed to the opaque or almost translucent look yeah. to it.
And since we're talking about salmon and halibut, these are favorite fares of Alaskans. It's summertime and we're breaking out the barbecues, and we're also discussing and cooking the foods, the feast that everybody has caught throughout the year, and that's including moose and caribou. If you're one of the lucky ones, then doll sheep. But yeah. moose... It has been given to me in the barter system many times. I have never cooked it right. What are the secrets to cooking good moose?
Well, I think it depends on the cut of meat. You know, definitely if you're using backstrap, which is pretty much like the tenderloin of moose, it's not going to have as much fat content. So, you know, you do want to cook that to a medium rare or medium, because if you overcook it, you're going to take all the flavor out of it. You know, you want those juices. That's where the flavor's at for that. You know, and something simple like a backstrap, simple salt and pepper and nice grill, something like that is going to be really, really good. Moose ribs are really popular and amazing. Best ribs I've ever had were moose ribs.
Do you cook those just like you do a beef rib? Or?
You can, some people boil them first. I like to just do a rub on it. And if you have a pretty good sized grill, gas grill, you want to turn the heat on one side and then off on the other side, and you want to put the meat on the one side that the heat is off, and just so that air is circulating, and then do just a really good rub and, you know, medium heat, and just let it sit for 6 hours.
Wow.
You know, and just so that meat's really going to fall off the bone once you get done with that.
Now, I heard somebody tell me the other day, and then another person say it was taboo, but soaking moose in milk. Is that possible, or is that a bad idea?
It's possible. I think what they're trying to do is to maybe take a little bit of the bitterness out and a little bit of the flavor. And it depends on what kind of moose you got. If you got a moose in the middle of the rut season, you know, it's going to taste a little bit different. You know, all the hormones going through it, everything else. So, you know, a good roast, moose roast, you know, you do just like a good beef roast, you know, crock pot, always a good idea.
Crockpot. Okay, there has to be a secret about this crockpot thing. I'm admitting a little bit about myself on air today, but yeah, crockpot. I know how to spell it. I know mm-hmm. how to plug it in. I don't understand the magic of what goes into it and how or why it works.
Slow cooking, pretty much. That the pot is really retains the heat, and you know, we just did a roast the other night in a crockpot, and they just come out so tender and great.
So what's the average that you're going to put a moose roast in for? How long does that take?
It depends on the size of the roast. You know, if it's a regular, typical size roast, you know, a couple pounds, 2-3 pounds, I'd go for 4.5-5 hours, and, you know, and always check it. You can come back to it and check it.
And as caribou goes, does it, since it's a game thing, is it kind of the same way to cook it, or?
Yeah. For caribou, you know, you're going to get a little bit of smaller cuts of meat just because the animal's a lot smaller. So sauteing it and stuff, and you know, there's you can use it pretty much any way you'd use beef, but you obviously know that the taste is going to be a little bit different.
So say somebody says, hello, I have this roast of caribou and we're coming over for dinner, impress us, what would you do with that?
That's a good question. I would roast it, you know, throw it in a pan with some good vegetables, potatoes, mirepoix, which is celery, onions, and carrots, the basis, and throw it in a little bit of red wine in the bottom, deglaze, and roast it off.
Great. Christine in Anchorage just wrote in, too, stating that baking rice in a square pan with foil over the top, 2.5 cups liquid with about 1.5 cups rice with some butter and salt. Bake that for an hour at 375 degrees and comes up with perfect rice every time. There you go. Another one. We do like our rice here, by the way. Yes. I don't know if you noticed when we had that big scare of rice shortage.
Oh, yeah.
How Sagaya suddenly went from having a billion 50-pound bags of rice to nothing.
Costco was the same way.
Very impressive. We like our rice here.
There was a line waiting for the rice at Costco when that was going on.
So regardless of whether we're eating tofu or moose meat, we still want our rice with it. In fact, I think I've got Andy over here from Dutch Harbor. Andy, hello. You have frying beans first? Hello, Andy? Well, Andy might not be there. We'll see if Andy's back there in a minute. But no, Andy,
hello? Oh, hello?
Andy's there. Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Good.
You have a tip on frying dried beans?
Hi, Andy. How you doing? Hello.
Seems to be a bit of a delay. We'll come back to you, Andy, if we can get that one fixed up. In any case, we can go ahead and move forward with a couple of other things. Again, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing how to make the foods we take for granted scrumptious. If you're out there listening and have something to share, I encourage you to go ahead and call in. We have a few more minutes left of this show. The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433, or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. Now, there are, of course, those of us who prefer to eat a lighter fare or a vegetarian, even at the barbecue grill. And there's this mysterious thing we've seen over maybe at the health food store, and if we're afraid to try it or we don't like the flavor of it, but heard that it's so great, it's called seitan. And can you tell us, Ellen, a little bit about what that is and how to make that strange, mysterious substance taste better?
Well, seitan is... It's a gluten product. It's made from wheat gluten and nutritional yeast. And it's very, very easy to make. You can buy it in the store, same section where you'd find tofu, packaged tofu. But don't be afraid to make it at home. All you need is a big bowl. You put your mixture dried ingredients together. I'll put the recipe on my website. And then you add your liquids in and you mix it all together and you make a ball and you put it in a big pot of cold water and just bring it to a boil. And you want to move your ball of seitan around so that it's not rolling in the boiling water. You want to make sure that it doesn't stick to the bottom of the pan. But it's very easy and it's nice to work with because it gives you that meat-like texture. And the good thing about making homemade seitan is that you... can control the texture. Because sometimes you want something that's more like a roast. Mm-hmm. And so you want something you can slice, like a turkey or a roast. So you can make it firmer, and you can shape it the way you need to. Or you can make it a little... less dense if you're going to be shredding it up to make like a pulled pork type consistency. But it's great stuff to work with, and it's really nice to make it at home because you can store it. It'll keep in the refrigerator in liquid for about a week and a half. So it's a lot more economical.
Yeah, and it seems like texture is a big thing for people who are going to give up meat or have given up meat in the past for their diet. And yeah, seitan has a nice texture to it if it's done right, it seems. Mm-hmm. And TVP, as we mentioned before, mm-hmm. that seems to be like a really great additive for chilies and such as well, correct?
Exactly. And TVP is great for meatballs, for meatless meatballs. And seitan is great. I do all kinds of things with seitan. I make barbecue seitan, which is really good for cookouts. And, you know, when you're going somewhere and you want to bring something where you can fit in, this barbecue seitan works out really well.
And you do that on the grill, or?
You can grill it. And you can also put it on skewers so that you actually have the rib, like, you know, something to hold, like a rib.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of steak, we have Lisa in Talkeetna who has some steak tips. Hello, Lisa.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. One of the things that I like to do, and this is something that has always worked for me, is that when you, well, I like my steaks pretty much rare, but this will work for any kind of steak. After you've seared it on both sides for a couple, 3 minutes, take it off the grill. You know, just let it sit on a plate for like 10 minutes, because that'll cause all of the juices to retreat within the meat, and it'll make it really juicy, and it will continue to cook it. A lot of people leave things on the grill for too long, even if they cut into them with a knife and they say, whoa, that's a little too rare for me. And by the time they get it off and it's sitting on the plate, then it's overdone. And so I also use that method with chicken and anything else. You know, it's like always take it out of the oven or off of the stove or off of the grill before it should be done, and let it sit for about 10 minutes and it should be perfect. And if it's not, you can stick it back on. But once it's gone too far, you can't take that back.
Well, great. Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, that's a good advice, because it seems that too often the meat is overdone. And chicken as well, right?
Yeah, letting your meat rest is always a good idea. Like she said, the juices are going to kind of work themselves around in there, and you're going to get carryover temperature, like she was talking about. It's going to carry over at least 5 to 10 degrees more. So if you're looking for a medium rare, you want to pull it off at about 125. But, you know, you would also want to pull it at 120, because it's going to come up to that 125. But if you like it a little bit more towards the medium, you know, pull it at 130, because it's going to go up to 130.
You're speaking in numbers here. You do know that.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, when you let it rest, you just put some foil over it.
Oh, right. Foil over it.
So. Yeah, when it's resting, that does it a little bit quicker. And, you know, for people who want their meat a little bit more done than you do, and you pull everything off at the same time, put some foil over theirs. It'll cook it a little bit more.
Got it. So if you just put it, but not while it's cooking, correct?
No, while it's resting.
No. While it's resting.
While it's resting.
Resting. And I'm sure resting. Thanks. Thank you, Lisa.
Bye.
I think for resting meat, that's one of the temperatures that you just gave as well.
Right, yeah. Fahrenheit, you know. Food typically should be cooked, you know, chicken definitely wants to be, you know, about 155, 160. Whereas, you know, your red meats, obviously, you can go a little bit more rare with them. And, you know, 125 degrees is about medium rare.
Okay, what about the fillets? Those seem to be the hardest one to get right, because they're so fat and thick and mm-hmm. so small at the same time. How do you get a perfect medium rare fillet if you're doing it in an oven?
In an oven? That's a good question. I like to, if you're going to do it in the oven, I would sear it off first. Get some good sear, because if you want to put that seasoning on there, it's going to sear that seasoning right into the meat, and then throw it into the, you know, sear it for a good 2 minutes on either side, and then throw it into a hot oven, 450 degrees. And if you're going for a medium rare, you know, check it after about 5-6 minutes, something like that. Obviously, if you're going a little bit longer, you want to leave it in longer, and just, you know, do the touch method of seeing if it's done. If it's got some spring in it, really good spring in it, it's going to be a more medium rare to medium.
Well, we don't have a lot of time left here, but speaking of putting some spring into something, shrimp is another dish that I seem to find most of us fail at, because it's got that great texture and it can have great flavor when we go to a restaurant, but unfortunately it doesn't just magically get that flavor. It's kind of a tasteless substance, I've found. How do you make shrimp beautiful?
Oh my. Well, I would say, you know, a good marinade is always, you know, the citrus works wonderful on shrimp.
Do you need to cut shrimp open to get it to soak up its marinade?
Yeah, if you're going to saute it or something like that, you want to definitely peel it and devein it. Take out the...
Yeah, clean up your shrimp.
Yeah, clean your shrimp up really well. But if you're going to do like a boil where you're doing like ready-to-eat, peel peel to eat shrimp, you know, you want to boil it, boil the shrimp, but you want to do it in some seasoned water. You know, I throw a little bit of Cajun seasoning in there, some half lemons, take the lemons, cut them in half, squeeze the juice in there, and just kind of throw them in there. That kind of stuff to help the boil, and, you know, you can even throw some cloves in there, any kind, depending on what flavor profile you're looking for. But if you're doing, like, the typical ready-to-eat with cocktail sauce and stuff like that, you want to boil it in some flavored water, add a little bit of salt to it, lemon definitely.
Oh, that's great. And what about doing, like, white wines and butters? Do those work when you're sautéing?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can't go wrong.
No.
And it's can you do too much wine? How does it work?
You can, definitely. I have a pregnant fiancé at home, and she definitely lets me know if I put too much alcohol in the food. It's not palatable to her while she's pregnant.
Right, of course not.
Yeah, so, you know, you can definitely over-wine it for the flavor.
Can you over-wine anything?
Over.
Really quickly, too, before we go on, we close up this show really fast. We do want to talk really quickly about tofu. Just really quickly, what is the fastest, best way to make a tofu dish that's easy, quick, and flavorful?
Okay, let's see. Well, frying tofu is a fun, quick, easy thing to do. And all you need to do is, again, marinate, cut it into chunks, season it with whatever it is that, whatever flavor you're going for. And don't be afraid. You can almost, as opposed to too much wine, you can't put too much flavor into tofu, into a marinade with tofu. So even if you're dealing with crushed red peppers, don't be afraid to use quite a bit, because it is such a sponge. And then cut it up and toss it into some hot oil, and you get some nice puffy treats that you can, you know, put with another sauce, like sweet and sour.
Great. And just one other thing I want to get really fast from both of you, guilty pleasures. Okay, I know that you're both really great gourmet chefs. What is, however, Guy, your one guilty pleasure that is not gourmet?
That is not gourmet? I like Mexican food, you know, and you can make Mexican food gourmet, but I like the simple, very simple stuff. You know, it's simple is better for me.
Great. And Ellen?
Oh, gosh. I would say pizza. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Cheaper.
It can be, you know, I'm from New Jersey. I like that New York style pizza.
Well, this hour has gone by very fast. It always seems to. And thank you for joining me and my guest today, Chef Guy Connolly of Ginger Restaurant on Fifth Avenue, and Chef Ellen Robertson of Heart and Soul Catering and Wellness Services. Next week, June 2nd, join Hometown Alaska's host, Ellen Lockyer, and our guests as they discuss hometown or homegrown tomatoes and how to get them in Alaska. Pat Yak is APT Vice President of News and Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program with assistance from intern Josh Edge and Connie Huff. Thanks for listening. I'm Tika Ballas.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.